It's January 31st, 2013. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
We are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
Yeah, we have Skype, an angry bird.
That's all you need, really.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That's how you launch a successful mobile platform, is to have this Skype and Angry Bird.
If those two things together really make... that's all I need in a mobile phone experience, is the Skype and the Angry Bird.
Yeah. I just saw in the show notes, you have something that I am so excited about.
Is this the hand soap?
No. The first thing on your list.
The first thing. All right. Well, we'll get there when we get there.
You know, hand soap, I never wash my hands. I don't even know.
Okay.
But yeah, so first things first.
First things first.
I've been playing some games.
Wow.
You sent me...
Oh, I know FTL. You've been playing... No, but I know you've been playing more of XCOM, because I've seen you playing it on the PlayStation... on the PlayStation Network.
So about that, I've been discovering that I kind of enjoy the multiplayer XCOM.
Ooh.
I'm really bad at it.
I feel like that, and I feel like most of the people that are currently playing that multiplayer are probably really, really good at it, too.
Well, they're probably, like, always going to be really good, because it's like, the longer... Because what was it that you told me when I was playing Uncharted 2? You were like... So the thing about Uncharted 2 is that Uncharted 3 is out now, and so anyone playing multiplayer Uncharted 2, it's because they're really good at it, and they haven't bought Uncharted 3 yet. So
right.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, XCOM is probably not quite that bad, but like, you know, around launch, you have the possibility that you're going to get people who are new to it. Now it's, you know, maybe a few here and there, but I'm sure that people playing that are hardcore.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is that it's taken so long for me to queue for games now that I think that I'm so bad I'm actually out of a bracket. Like, I think they're pretty much, like, you know, kicking bottom feeders to me.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think I've won 2 matches and played, like, 20.
Nice.
Yeah. But I've also been playing FTL. Thank you. You sent me that for my birthday.
FTL is, yeah. No,
very nice of you.
You cannot go wrong with FTL.
You know, that's a lot of fun. My only gripe about it, if it's even a gripe, is that I really wish that my Steam games, like FTL, kind of like saved their game stuff in a shared way.
Yeah.
Like, so when I play on the laptop, I'd like to have the same playthrough.
So there is a framework for that. It's called Steam Cloud Saves.
Okay.
And it does work as long as the game actually supports it. So it's not a generic thing. The game has to have a specific hook into Steam Cloud Saves, and FTL doesn't.
You know what's killing me about FTL, though, is that it would have been amazing on iPad.
I'm sure it'll come to iPad. It's gotta, right?
I would think so, but wasn't this like a Kickstarter project? And like, I remember reading an interview.
Yeah, but it's done so well. I mean, if they need funding to go to other platforms, I think it's pretty easy for them to get it at this point.
Yeah, but they said that they didn't like that. Like I read an interview where they said that it'll be a while before they would take a Kickstarter thing like that because it puts so much pressure on them. Like there was some, I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, not even Kickstarter money. Like if they want to bring it to iPad, I'm sure there is an investor out there that would give them the money to make that happen. You know,
that's true. Or that their sales have been good enough that they could fund it.
And they probably can fund it themselves at this point, too. Yeah.
Because, I mean, seriously, like, the way that game plays, and it's kind of like, so it takes place in space, and there's, like, the ship-to-ship combat thing, and you're kind of, like, hopping through these, you know, you're warping from sector to sector, trying to race ahead of this army that's chasing you, essentially. So, when you jump into a sector, you might be involved in some ship-to-ship combat. You might be visiting, like, a vendor. You might find nothing. Or you might find, like, a quest thing, right? So on something like the iPad where it's such an ideal fit for it because it's so... Just the way that the game plays. I'm really surprised that it wasn't done on the iPad first.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess... with PC, you've got a pretty easy way to reach that core gaming audience through Steam.
That's true.
And also the the iOS app store is so crowded with indie games at this point, and you know, from on the along the spectrum of really great unique games to just really awful games, that it is actually becoming very difficult to debut your game there and have it have a significant impact because the store is so crowded.
Just today, I saw that like some I can't remember the tight name of it now, so maybe you're onto something. But they said that they released like a new record, like 50 million downloads in 2 weeks or something like that.
Wow!
And it was a pretty big deal because it beat the Angry Bird record that was previously set. Playing all this FTL got me wondering about like, you know, I don't play a lot of games that take place in space, so I was like, well, I dusted off my I went looking for my Homeworld discs, and I think I couldn't find. I have the media for Homeworld, but not the license key, and I'm pretty sure that like, you know, it's long gone and dead. And so I installed Homeworld 2, which I did have the key for still, and I put that into a Windows VM. And a couple of things that bothered me about this process is that it's an older game, so like it has no concept of a widescreen, you know.
So
have to play it like 1280x1024. You know, and it's like, oh, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. But, well, so sometimes I mean, depending on how popular the game is, like for Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, you can get mods that make it widescreen.
KOTOR 2 I've actually recently purchased, like on the Apple App Store. I bought a copy of that for like $9.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it plays fantastic.
Yeah.
But and that's like one of my wife's favorite games. But playing Homeworld 2 briefly, really I was just like, oh, this is so great. And like that game, I mean, here's the thing is I'm not really I spend some time on games, but I wouldn't really call myself a gamer. I don't like really follow the industry or anything.
Sure.
I mean, you definitely know a lot more about the field than I do, but the Homeworld 2, the story behind it is fantastic. The series is great. I really wish that they would release it in a more modern flavor, but mm-hmm. It kind of got me moving towards checking out EVE Online, which I've never actually played before.
So first of all, you should join my corporation.
I'm shocked.
I had a really brief stint of playing EVE Online more than a year ago, where I at some point just tried it out on a whim, and ended up getting, you know, it was sort of intrigued me enough that I sort of got past the trial phase, be like, all right, I'll throw a little money into this and subscribe for a few months. And then after purchasing a subscription, never came back to it again. But I did manage to start a corporation. I got all the money I needed to start a corporation. Started a corporation, recruited a few people who I knew already. So it wasn't in-game
trade recruiting. Channel pubbies.
Also placed
it's
an
me,
ad.
Captain D's Nuts. That was one guy that I saw the other day.
Nice. That's good.
Classy.
Yeah. And placed an ad for the corporation in the like message board thing, but that is about as far as I got. But it is a really, really cool idea. The actual gameplay is can get a little repetitive.
So here's the thing, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that too.
And they've done an amazing job at like really capturing the scale of being in outer space, and that's like one of the things that I liked about Homeworld so much was that there was the moments of complete isolation, that there's like just not another living thing for, you know, light years in either direction, which is really, you know, kind of eerie. And the other thing that they do really well is that they have this like gigantic economic system there, right? Like, and this is, you know,
economic, people, political, like corporate. Yeah, it's a whole.
People that play this game and have played it for years really are heavily invested in it, and they know a lot about what's going on. There's a lot of inside baseball. Like, there's a lot of slang terminology that I have not picked up on at all yet. The one thing that I really like about it is that. Well, I mean, it's a different game now than it was years ago. So I never would have picked it up because they didn't have a Mac client for a while, right? And I remember there was a guy in my office in Providence. This was like, it had to be like 4 or 5 years ago. The game's been around for a while. But back in the day, and he would talk about this game, and he, I guess, was like one of the people that came up with the first like systems for botting and for like basically an autopilot system that would pick the right routes to take to places. And I guess like some of his code actually got picked up by the developer. But he was like one of the first people to like automate mining. So he had like this really ridiculous multi-boxing thing going on where he basically had this mining operation that ran in, you know, I assume VMware instances that he ran on a computer somewhere, but that was, you know, that was his big thing. Like that was,
wow.
That was his little side project for a while. But the, gosh, you know, it's very different now. So like when I've mentioned that I was taking a look at this game, and people were like, oh wow, you know, you can have like a person, like the fact that I can have like a character that can walk around in like my ship's quarters is a really big change from like how the game used to be. So
No, that's right, you can do that now. There's not a whole lot of I mean, it's more an atmospheric thing than a functional thing.
Like you're not really interacting with people, but you definitely have like this captain's quarters thing you can kick around in.
Mass Effect style.
I've been playing around with that. Yeah, exactly. I've been playing around with that a little bit, and so far I've been finding some parts of it rather tedious, but at the same time, like, oddly compelling.
It is. That's exactly how. Yeah, that's exactly how I found it. It was.
Yeah.
It's.
And I'm
like
tempted because a friend of mine said that he used to play, and he's like, he still has like an inactive account, and I'm contemplating just borrowing his for a month.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
Just reinstating it and playing it with like real ships and see how it plays.
Right. Yep.
And that was a good thing to do while I was like waiting for my NAS tasks, because I had all these like synchronization jobs to like move stuff from my old NAS onto my new free NAS box that I built. So that's
right,
pretty exciting.
I'm reading this line and I'm waiting for you to explain it. Migration of media from NAS 0 to NAS 02 on FreeNAS is complete. I'm very happy for you. This sounds like a great accomplishment.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but it's definitely the tedious process. I had like 3 terabytes of data that's like mainly DVD rips, right? And then I'm moving that to the bigger NAS. So the 3 terabyte NAS is the small one.
Sure, yeah.
and then I have the 9 terabyte slash, it's a, what is it? 6 terabytes usable, on the new one. And
nice.
Then, so that's great. And it's also faster because it's a better processor and everything. So instead of like the tiny Spark processor in my old Ready NAS from years and years ago, I've got a nice, quad core machine kicking it and,
cool.
It's working pretty well.
Is even that going to be enough space? Six usable terabytes?
It will be for the next 2 years.
Okay.
And then after that, it'll be, since it's a, so what's nice about FreeNAS is that, it's built on FreeBSD and they use a implementation of, ZFS, and that lets me create a storage pool like I did. And then I don't have to like destroy it and like copy everything over when I want to add more storage. All I have to do is add another 3-disk set to the existing pool and it will just expand into it.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's one of the nice things about ZFS is that you can easily grow your storage out without having to monkey with it. So what I'll do at that point is, either get like a, just an eSATA enclosure and drop 4 drives into it and set 3 up, or I don't know what I'll do, but I don't have to figure it out now. That's kind of the nice thing. But right now, everything's all self-contained in a shuttle XPC box. So I've got like this little bread box that has all my datas. The weird thing that happened to me last week, though, was 2 things. One, I didn't realize that I didn't have it on the UPS. So when I had a space heater plugged in, because it was really cold this week, I wound up like bouncing it a couple times. And then my video card on it stopped working, which was kind of bizarre, but I went out to Best Buy and for $39 I just bought like a PCI Express video card that all I needed was something that worked, you know.
Sure.
But it was definitely a little odd. But the machine couldn't boot after it had crashed because it couldn't initialize video, and then I was like, well, what's going on? So I had to go out to big brouhaha. But
How was buying a video card at Best Buy?
You know what? It wasn't terrible.
Okay.
They don't have a lot of selection, and in the way of, like, you know, modern video cards, it's pretty bleak. You've got, like, two options, and they're both very expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, Best Buy, what I'd like to see them do, and I think really at this point they need to do, is they should really focus on the things that you can't wait for.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, this means washers and dryers, dishwasher, refrigerator, stoves, ovens, microwaves, just like the little appliances like that, right? And yeah. Then they should also have, like, you know, cables, plugs, accessories, and which are basically going to be like their impulse buy section. And mm-hmm. then they should just get rid of their stupid CDs and movies and keep TVs, but scale that down a bit. I think they should really focus on the things that you're not going to want to wait 24 hours for Amazon Prime to get to your door.
Yeah.
And really that's about it. Because, well, they cannot compete with Amazon on price. So that's a losing battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their service isn't outstanding. Like, I guess it's good for retail, but that's not really saying a whole lot. I don't know anyone that, like, has to go to the Best Buy and talk to someone there about a problem, you know?
Yeah, it's not even great for retail. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many Best Buys you've been to, but
yeah.
In general, it's the
Well, surely that's like store by store too.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's
somewhere there's a bad Apple store.
You know? Yeah, that's like, true.
one of them somewhere in the world has to be like the lowest rated one, you know.
But, yeah. So but anyway. It's like I don't think of Best Buy as a pleasant shopping experience.
No. They're usually
I think of Best Buy as like you're saying, actually, a necessity. Like, oh, I need to pick some electronic thing up. And I need it now, and sure, there's a Best Buy on my way home from work. I'll swing by it.
Yes. I need a car charger for my something.
Yep.
And, you know, while I'm there, I'll pick up a gold-plated HDMI cable.
Yeah.
THX-certified S-Video. I think that's really, if they can do that, they can slim down significantly on some of their cash they're laying out. Someone was telling me today that supposedly Best Buy makes up like 20% of Apple's retail sales channel.
Wow.
Huh. There's a lot of places, like my town, we don't have an Apple store.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's, you know, when I lived in D.C., there was like, you know, five.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
So, yeah. But there's definitely stuff that they sell a lot of. But I really think that the value in buying it there is not that high. But
all right.
I've been learning to play the ukulele. That's my last thing.
Great.
I'm dead serious, by the way. I went to my local music store here in town and I picked one up. It's very inexpensive.
Was this on a whim? Was this, you know what? I should learn to play the ukulele.
Well, so here's the thing. I've always thought it was a funny instrument. It's kind of a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very, you know, distinct tone.
And but a pleasant tone. I mean, you know.
Yeah. You can't be mad.
Like, as like, far as strange instruments go, it's
there's
a pretty...
nobody, like, you know, in a fit of rage smashing a ukulele on stage anywhere. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. Yeah. But very easy, four strings. And I never learned how to play the guitar. So this was kind of like, you know, this could be really cool. But I've been thinking about it for a little while. And I mentioned it to my wife, and she's just like, totally, you should do it. Like, get a ukulele. So far, she's played it, like, about three times as much as I have. And since she knew how to play the guitar, like, she actually, like, she's already playing stuff and singing to our kid. And
nice.
The kid loves it, by the way.
Nice.
She gets way into it. But
now, did you go for, like, you know, sort of learners, you know,
yes,
ukulele
yes.
thing? Or did you go for, like, the super high-end?
My natural instinct, of course, is to buy the nicest one that I can possibly
course.
Find.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was, you know, playing around with those, and I figured this time, you know, I have a family now. I should still be a little more frugal, buy fewer than six bags a year, and not get the fanciest ukulele I can find when I've never played it before. So I went for the $40 all lacquer all the time,
yeah,
like plasticky one. But it still sounds pretty good. and I've been learning a little bit about the nuances of the ukulele, but there were some beautiful ones there. And obviously there's, you know, looking online, there's all sorts, but
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, it's not that difficult to pick up. It's pretty comfortable to play. And like I said, I've never played a stringed instrument before. I've never played the guitar more than just, you know, picking up someone else's and plucking at it. So
yeah, sure.
I think that, and you know, shoot. Who am I thinking of? Damn it. I'm thinking of the Beatles. Oh man, this is
Paul McCartney.
No, I said the Beatles, not the hangers on. So not Ringo and not Paul, and not John.
Not John Lennon?
No.
Not Ringo Starr?
No.
Not Paul McCartney?
No.
So who is it? Who is it?
You're killing me here. It's my wife's favorite Beatle. She's going to totally kill me if she hears this. Why am I blanking on her name? This is killing me. What is wrong with me? Come on. You're torturing me. I want... Oh, man, this is terrible.
Are you Googling it?
Yeah, of course I am, because I'm seriously blanking on the dude's name. Because the tragic thing, of course, about the Beatles is that they're dying and they're in order of talent, right?
They're I see.
So
wait,
you know,
you really think Paul's gonna die before Ringo?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
He has to,
because right,
Ringo's
right.
The worst.
Yeah.
I mean, the only person I know that likes Ringo is Marge Simpson, and she's not real. You know, like I have no other explanation for it. I mean, it's really unfortunate, but so, anyways, George Harrison, of course, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
thank you,
that
Wikipedia.
One, that
gosh,
guy.
What is the matter with me? But he always traveled with two ukuleles. I didn't know this. This was
really because yeah. I mean I believe Paul McCartney has done some ukulele work.
He has, and I'm sure they all have. But George Harrison traveled with two because he said that it was an instrument best played with a friend.
Hmm. There you go.
But yeah, and then cool. This got me. What started me off on this, I think, was probably when Ravi Shankar died, because they were playing all of the music that the Beatles did, or that George in particular did with not the sitar. What's the
The sitar, I think.
Is it the sitar?
Yeah, yeah.
The music that that he would play with that, and learning that from him. And then I was like, man, they played some really cool instruments. And I was going down the list, and I was like, oh, yeah, the ukulele.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, totally. It was, it's pretty good. I think you should pick it up. We should play together. We could do a duet.
I've never had success with any musical instrument.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
I've always told people that I play the MIDI. You know, if it involves like programming notes into a computer software, I'm there.
I played the piano, I played trombone, played French horn, I played flugelhorn, which is like a essentially a trombone, but it's valved. We did that in marching band, because of course I was in marching band. What else did I play? That's pretty much it.
You're already impressing me. That's a lot of instruments.
Well, they're all horns.
Oh, yeah,
the piano is not, but I haven't played that in a while.
Mm.
I could probably still read music, but we have a piano. My wife plays.
Mm. All right. Well, that's an awful lot
of stuff.
Yeah. I've got a few things. I at some point discovered that eBay is a thing again. And
that's like
actually,
the electronic bay, right?
It's like an electronic bay. The reason I actually discovered it and have been getting into it a bit is their Android apps are rather good. The way you do searches and monitor your auctions and all that sort of stuff in their apps, and I'm sure their iOS apps are probably comparable too.
I wouldn't throw a parade for it, but
the way you do all this stuff in the apps though is so much better than the website.
The website looks, they've done some rebranding.
They've definitely,
right?
They've updated the website, but there is still like the way you browse
PayPal
through
still
stuff.
Sucks.
Oh, well, there's that. The way you browse through stuff in the app, the way notifications work, all that stuff just works really smoothly, compared to the website. So,
huh.
So kind of have been enjoying that, and specifically have been enjoying hunting down a Dreamcast.
That is so awesome.
A Sega Dreamcast, yeah.
I'm aware. I'm familiar. I know its work.
I'm actually staring at it right now.
There are actually
two games that came with it. One is a quote unquote game. One of them is Crazy Taxi.
Okay, that is a definitive title for that platform.
Of course. But the disc is a little scratched up though, so I may try and get a better copy of it.
Do you know how to fix that?
A scratched disc?
Well, not like if it's deeply scratched, but you know how to clean one, right? Like where you start at the inside and you work out.
I do not. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, well, we can. Well, this might be something that our listeners will enjoy. So,
all right, sure.
The way to do this is if you get like a microfiber cleaning cloth, and you hold the disc data side up, right,
mm-hmm.
and put it on your finger. Let mm-hmm. me see if I have a visual aid for people. Well, I guess. Anyways, you balance it on your finger, and then what you want to do is kind of like pinch around the disc with that cleaning cloth. And mm-hmm. kind of drag it outward. So you don't want to go like back and forth on the media. You want to start at the middle and come out. And you just do that over and over again and work your way around the disc. And that's the appropriate way to clean optical media.
Hmm.
And sometimes...
So the movements you're making are from center to... Or to like along a radius, or a radius line.
Yes. You're going from the center out to the edge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the right way to do it. And even with like light scratches...
Yeah.
I've been able to, I don't know if it's like buffing this, I don't even know, but I've been able to get things to play.
Cool. It plays fine just every, or at least one time while I was playing it, I came up with a little note that was saying, hey, disc is hard to read, but it kept going. So I don't actually, the game is working fine. This thing is in, the console itself is in fantastic condition. It was not expensive. It was about $40.
Did it come with a VMU?
It did come with a VMU.
So that was like the little memory card that had like an LCD display. It was kind of like that Tamagotchi, right?
It's super cool. It is such a good idea. I can't believe no one else just copied that in future consoles. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
It came with one of its controllers was new in box.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is great because I love that because with my biggest concern with a used console is I'm going to be handling this controller for hours and I don't know what's happened to it in the past.
Oh, yeah. It's probably been in some teenage boy's room and who the hell knows what they do to him.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, this console was clearly, it was probably adult owned. It seems to have been treated very, very well. Almost no cosmetic scratches or like little nicks or anything like that.
What was the other game?
The other game was the web browser.
Oh, okay.
which is actually still factory sealed. That CD.
I think there was like an Ethernet module for it that I had.
There's a it has a phone jack in it.
Yeah, but I thought there was a separate module that I had for mine that let me get it on Ethernet.
That'd be good because I don't actually have a working phone line in my apartment.
Man, no one does.
Yeah. I am curious to see whether this web browser still works, whether like a game like Phantasy Star Online would still work.
Here's what it's called. You want to find the Dreamcast broadband adapter.
Okay.
And that was at the time it was $60.
Yeah.
It was it replaces the modem module.
Okay. Okay. It plugs into the. Or wait, well,
if I remember correctly, like the modem module pops out, like it's like a slide.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
And then you pop that guy out, and then you put this guy in. And
how about a GameCube broadband adapter? That's what I'm seeing here.
Not likely, but the the game that I played online was Phantasy Star Online.
Oh, that's what I was just saying. I would totally want to see if Phantasy Star Online still works in any form.
Oh yeah, I have no idea. They have a new version of it for the PSP that I've played.
They're actually coming out with a new version for PC, but it's currently available in Japan only. I think it's coming to the US at some point. But,
well, whoopee woo. It's not a great game. At least the ones previous weren't.
All right, broadband adapter.
Yeah, I mean,
I will check on that.
I had a bunch of games for it that I liked a lot. I had the ones that really kind of defined that platform were the original Soul Calibur, Crazy Taxi, Choo Choo Rocket.
Oh boy,
which is also available for iOS now and is great on iOS. That's like a puzzle game. It's Choo Choo Rocket.
So the Dreamcast broadband adapter.
Yeah.
$140.
Ooh, that's more than double what it was retail when it was new.
Yep.
That does not surprise me at all. That's like how you can buy an Apple TV on eBay now for like $200. And the Apple TV 3 is like $60 right now.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
Jailbreak the second one.
That is intense. All right. So anyway, I'm super happy though. It's just super cool. Dreamcast is such a cool, weird system. I love it. So
I just remembered my friend. I won't say her name, but she had a mod disc for her Dreamcast, and I remember the name of it, and it was hilarious because one of the guy that did MTV News was a guy named his name was Kurt Loder, and the bootloader disc that you use was called the Kurt Loder. And it had like a picture of him that came up when you booted it.
Great.
So you could play copies of games. Yeah.
Great.
That was pretty fun. Kurt Loder.
All right, cool. So there's that. In general, I've just been checking out eBay stuff, especially old video game stuff. Just to see what's out there. And then in modern game news in my stuff, we've got a lot of video game stuff going on for both of us.
Ni
No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch.
I saw that this game is really getting some great reviews.
It's getting a lot of buzz, a lot of good press. It is a modern JRPG. I mean, it's a true JRPG that is coming out now, right? Like it's the sort of game that we haven't seen in a while. It is a combined effort between Level 5, which is the development studio that did the Professor Layton games, as well as a bunch of other stuff.
Hmm.
And Studio Ghibli, I don't know how to pronounce it. But they did Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away and a lot of the other, landmark anime films.
Princess Mononoke, that movie was one of the first ones that I had, I think, that had a DTS-ES audio track, and it was amazing.
Really?
Like, the sound for that movie on a home theater with proper speakers was just outstanding.
Nice.
I never played any of the games or anything, though.
So the sound for this game is amazing. It's recorded by the Tokyo Philharmonic Orchestra, composed by the same guy that composed the Studio Ghibli movies, a lot of the notable ones. Joe Hisaishi? Something like that. It's
probably
just
a friend of Joy's.
It's just fantastic. The score is great. The game is great. Visuals are cartoony and very like whimsical. The matching between the Studio Ghibli animation cinematic stuff and the in-game rendered stuff is actually really smooth. It's really interesting how they married up the art styles between the hand-drawn stuff and the in-game polygonal rendered stuff. So, yeah, overall, I'm really, really enjoying it. I think I'm about 8-ish hours in.
Are there any characters that sound like they're being assaulted?
No, it does not pull a Final Fantasy 13 in that respect. It has generally been fine on that front, so.
All right.
So, yeah, I'll report back if I get further into it and if there's more developments, but it's been very, very cool so far.
I've been watching. There's like a game coming out for the PS3, but not until the summer that I really want to play. What is it called? And I'm also excited about the new Metal Gear game that's coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
The game I'm waiting for, though, is called Remember Me.
I have not heard of it.
Looks awesome, but it's going to be a long wait. I'm afraid. That's actually one that I'm really mad that I read about before before it was available.
Yeah, Ni No Kuni was like, I'd sort of heard about it here and there, but I didn't hear about it in any way that I noticed until after it came out, and there was a ton of buzz around it. So
Very exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting. You know what else is exciting?
No.
Hand soap.
Okay. that stunned silence you hear was me agreeing with you.
Yeah. So there is this hand soap that I have purchased. It is J.R. Watkins liquid hand soap. Specifically, I went for the lemon variety, but they also have aloe and lavender.
Do they have it in a foamy dispenser?
No foamy dispenser. It's straight up liquid soap. Mm.
Foam. I like bubbles.
It is awesome. It is awesome. It looks great. That's one of the best things about it is the bottle looks fantastic.
You told me that I would probably like the packaging. What's the story?
We'll take a look at the Amazon listing, which is linked in the show notes.
Okay.
All you listeners can follow along if you have the show notes handy.
Let's see here. Open link.
It's got this wonderful sort of like some of it sort of handmade looking.
That's a good label.
I know. It's a really, really great label. So there's that, and then the soap itself is...
Conscience-clearing power. That's amazing.
Yep.
Natural oil.
The soap itself is
skepticism-free, right there on the label.
Yes. Is all natural. It smells great.
Can you eat it?
I have not had any problems consuming it. not that I make a dedicated effort to consume soap, but occasionally, you know, it's like you're washing your face after you've washed your hands with the soap, and you know, you get a little in your mouth.
Like a six pack is $27. That's pretty good.
It's not expensive either. So and it looks really fancy. Like it's, you know, this looks like fancy soap. If you want some soap that you feel like you can really show off in your bathroom.
Yeah, how do you like
this? This is that soap. So, I mean, you know, it's not. I wouldn't say the experience of the soap has been that much better than any other soap. It's been good overall, and I like the smell of it and all that. But I really, really like the labeling and the packaging and all that. It just looks fantastic in the bathroom. So, that is actually a significant, you know, piece for me. Like, I don't want some neon red.
No. I have no argument here, man.
Yeah.
You're preaching to the choir.
Soap dispenser or something. So
the fancy, fancy lad choir.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. cool. And the last bit of stuff I have is something that I wasn't even going to throw on here, but then you had such a positive reaction to it.
Yeah.
The film Safety Not Guaranteed.
I had a blast watching that movie with my wife.
It's a cool film. It stars I don't think either of us know her name, but
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, from Parks and Rec. So it stars her I forget actually her character's name in Parks and Rec as well, but
She plays April on
April.
Parks and Rec.
April, that's the character's name.
Aubrey Plaza. And this was the main reason that my wife was going to entertain watching this movie.
Yes.
So she's like, oh, I love her. I was like, I know, right?
Yeah, so it's this really cool, kind of quirky, different movie.
The story here is that there was an ad in the newspaper. I can't remember, and I don't remember if this is even an urban legend or this was actually a real thing, but the ad was essentially that someone took out an ad in the newspaper looking for someone to travel back in time with them and that safety was not guaranteed. Essentially was the whole point of this ad, and it kind of spawned this movie. And also I know why I wanted to see it. Kristen Bell's also in it, but she's a very limited role.
It's basically a cameo.
She's
in it for such a small amount of time.
I was kind of disappointed in that, to be honest, because she's great too. But yeah, the Aubrey Plaza was like the main character, and then it's just I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was a great movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's definitely a different. So I would put its humor and pacing up there with like Moonrise Kingdom, Rushmore. Mm-hmm. Who's that guy? Why am I like so stupid tonight? Did I tell you I'm starting to try to kill this bottle of scotch? man. I can't remember the director. Wes
Anderson?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. So it has a similar feel to that, right? I think. Like it's not the same type of dry humor, but it's not slapsticky and it's not, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's very in that direction. I was telling you before the show my two favorite scenes. So one of them, this is a spoiler, but there's a
Try to soften the blow.
Yeah, I'll soften. There's this great scene at the end where some great things happen. Right? It's cool.
Yes.
And then this character who is just he's this like slacker newspaper reporter who makes his interns do all his work for him. Just this like really kind of hilarious character is just standing there. Watching what is happening and with his fist in the air in celebration and just has the best expression on his face. That was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. It was basically like he was kind of falling ass backwards throughout the entire movie with other people doing all the work for him and then him looking triumphant.
Yep. And he ends up here just looking perfectly triumphant. Like, rock on. This all came together.
I had absolutely nothing to do with this. Yeah, it was pretty great.
And my other favorite scene actually also involves him, where he is he's coaching this sort of like nerdy,
one of those interns,
nerdy Indian young intern, into how to deal with the ladies, and he swaps his large, awkward, clear glasses with these aviator sunglasses. And there's this great, great line where he's like, he puts the aviators on him. You look like a pilot. You look like you fly jets or something. It's just this.
Yeah. He's so just dangerous.
I actually, that is, and I rarely do this with movies. I actually rewound it and watched that scene again. It was just so perfect.
I think we may have backed up and watched the scene that you were mentioning before the show in the supermarket where she, Aubrey approaches the person that they believe is taking out this ad. And it's kind of funny. Like this whole, I think they're following me. The agents, there's a guy in a van. Like this whole like conspiracy that turns out might be legitimate.
Yeah. Anyway, I definitely enjoyed it. It is, as I said, fun, quirky comedy. So
it's great.
Cool. So what about unlocking my phone?
Oh my gosh. So you realize it's been too long again because our stuff took so long.
I know we're running over, but we should get through some of this.
Yeah, we'll probably only have time for like two segments because we got like 12 minutes. Everywhere that I've turned lately on the Facebooks of the internet, it's been basically people like, OMG, it's illegal to unlock phone. Call your congressman. And everyone's like in a complete panic, like, this is so stupid, blah, blah, blah. So let me kind of condense this down a little bit and why this should not freak you out. Mainly because if you don't want your phone to be locked, you can buy an unlocked phone. The only people that this is really going to affect are people who buy a phone on subsidy and then break contract or decide to modify the phone to use it on another carrier without permission. So what most people do, and I'm not saying that I don't mean to give the impression that I think this is a good policy, and I am not generally in favor of how the DMCA is used in a lot of instances, but in this particular one, someone from the Library of Congress like saying, you know, what falls under fair use and what doesn't. You might remember, I thought it was like over a year ago, but they clarified the position last October where they said basically that like jailbreaking phones, they did not believe an end user jailbreaking a phone should be considered a violation of copyright under the DMCA that should result in people being prosecuted. They basically said, you know, if you're Apple or you're Samsung or Sony and someone jailbreaks a device that they bought, that's just, you're too bad, basically. You know, you can, if you want to take someone to court about it, that's, you know, your business. But our stance is that it's not a violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the United States if this happens. the problem with the unlocking thing is that mobile phones are expensive, especially nowadays with smartphones. A lot of people don't really seem to be hip to this, I guess, but most phones have a retail price of about $600.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, like, you know, your iPhones. That includes your, I guess, the Nexus. You can only buy. What's the deal with that? The only one they sell is unlocked, and it's $400, right?
And you have to buy it directly from the Google Play Store as well. Yeah,
and so that's, you know, there are some exceptions, but by and large, when you buy a handset and you get a setup with a contract, you're getting a subsidized handset, so you're only paying, you know, $200 or whatever, mm-hmm, for your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the agreement there that they don't really, I mean, admittedly, they do a really terrible job of spelling this out to you, is that they're saying, we want you to be our customer for 2 years, so we're putting you into a contract. And since we're giving you this device at a reduced price, we're also locking it so that it's only usable on our service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the agreement that you're entering into when you buy the device,
right?
At that rate, in my opinion. I think it's a perfectly legitimate thing for them to request. And I also think it's a perfectly legitimate thing for them to enforce. The problem is that it's not clear to consumers in a lot of cases that that's why they're only paying $200 for an iPhone. Mm-hmm. And it's also why they're shocked when after a year they drop it into a urinal and they go into the store to replace it and they're charging them $600 for it. They're like, well, it was only $200 when I bought it. And like, you know, then they have to explain that the reason that it was $200 is because they knocked off $400 because of this service and blah, 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 blah. So
yep.
From their perspective, from the operator perspective, it's important for them because they need to recoup their cost on the hardware, obviously, and they also are busy gouging you in every way possible for the service. But this thing about the unlocking them being a violation, I'm actually okay with, because as far as I know, most operators in the United States, and certainly in other parts of the world where it's like a legal requirement, once you're out of this contract term, they will unlock the phone for you.
Yep. Yep. So, I had AT&T unlock an iPhone for me a few months ago.
Yeah, we tried to do it on the air, but I was late paying my bill. So but they did, after my term was up, they did unlock my iPhone 4 right before I dropped service to move to Verizon. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Verizon, so there's kind of a difference here in that the CDMA operators in the United States, which would be Sprint and Verizon, have kind of entered into this, as far as I understand it, a gentleman's agreement where they will not provision service for each other's handsets, and that they will require you to purchase a handset from them to use the service.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's legal or not, but I will say that when you buy an iPhone 5, at least from Verizon, I don't know about Sprint, but when you buy one from Verizon, the GSM radio is already unlocked.
Mm.
So you're essentially buying an unlocked phone from the GSM side, from Verizon, which is fine, to be honest, because the only person in the United States that they have to worry about is Sprint, and if Sprint is kind of in this, you know, backroom handshake where they're not turning up service anyways,
mm-hmm,
you know, because you can't really lock the device on CDMA, like there's not the same, you can and you can't, like it's a different methodology and a completely different paradigm for how the devices are provisioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, you know, on a GSM network like what AT&T and T-Mobile have, you have these little SIM cards that you use, and that's how a device is set up. So that's what they basically mean when they say locked. But yeah, I think that
locked meaning that you could not use another carrier's SIM card.
Yes, and they basically, and the reason they do that is because they want to protect their cost that they had in selling you a subsidized device. So mm-hmm, I've been spending a lot of time telling people to shut up when they're complaining about locked phones. And I say,
Involve the Apple or the Macintosh forums at all?
No, actually no.
Wow.
This involved, however, lots of friends on Facebook that were just being stupid.
Right.
And me picking a fight with them about it. And my wife was telling me, she's like, you got to talk about this on the show, because like she was getting like annoyed with it. Like everyone's like, it's illegal cell phone. Burr. And it's ridiculous. But lucky for you, it's a problem easily solved, because you can just buy a phone outright, mm-hmm, from your carrier, mm-hmm, and be done with it. Or you get the subsidized one and you deal with it at the end of your contract. Like, Yeah, it's.
It seems like the major problem is the misconception of what a subsidized phone agreement means.
Yeah, and part of that is the fault of the operators because they don't like to tell you.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
because at that point
you're actually paying the full price for this, but over the course of 2 years.
Yes, like, and they don't want to be. And this is also one of the few industries where. You know how they always say that, like, you know, taxes and regulations and blah, blah, blah make services more expensive for consumers and everything. The mobile phone industry, the telecom industry in general, is one of the few industries that actually gets away with passing all of that on to the consumer. So if you look at your bill, like, you're always like, well, what are all these charges? You know, your service is supposed to be $29.99 a month, right? Then you have, like, you know, the $9 E911 and the $3 local municipal whatever the F. And then there's all these, like, little nickel and dime charges, and that's because they're not paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's their industry regulations that they have to comply with that they don't have to bill you for, but they choose to do that because that's just who they are.
Sure.
And no one really ever holds them accountable for any of it. I mean, people complain about the phone company, like Ma Bell is always, you know, everyone's got to complain about the phone company, but nobody ever does anything about it. So, you know, alternate operators, MVMOs. Did you see that Ting from our friends in the north in Canada?
Mm-hmm.
She's from Canada, you know, north. But Ting is offering to buy people's ETFs. So if you have an early termination fee from Verizon, Ting will pay it.
Wow.
Which is an awesome, they set aside $100,000 just as an experiment to see why, because, you know, just to encourage people to switch, and I'll see how that goes for them. So I think that just started tonight, but yeah, I thought that was a brilliant marketing move on their part.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I think people just need to start holding people to it. I mean the thing is, there's so many hills to climb and so many battles to fight that the one about the phones is probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of the battle of the phones, we talked about it at this. We mentioned this at the start of the show, alluded to it, so we need to cover it before we close out here.
So you didn't even catch this, did you?
I didn't even know about that, which is which attests to the fact that this did not have any significant impact on the world.
the once juggernaut in the mobile phone industry, RIM, Research in Motion, had a device called the BlackBerry. It was the definitive mobile email device.
Hey, Obama still uses one.
He had another choice. A couple years ago, they stopped being relevant to anybody. The
Except
U.S. government,
the President of the United States.
Well, the U.S. government, Congress in particular, and the President's office.
Yep.
It's one of the few mobile devices that satisfies very specific requirements. And the reason that Obama's got a BlackBerry is because he needs to have a mobile device that has a separate cryptographic module that no other, you know, there's like two devices on the planet that never even had one of these things. So that's why he's using it. Congress and the military people have similar restrictions, but and depending on the type of data that they have to handle, and that's not really worth getting into. But long story short, BlackBerry 10 is a new operating system that's being launched. It had quite possibly. You remember there was a trade show where you were like making fun of someone like having Justin Bieber come out to announce.
Oh, right, yeah, that robot thing. That
yeah, this was worse than that. It was a horrible demo, and here's why. So they have these guys. They had someone in London, and then they had someone in New York, and they did like an international video conferencing call on these BlackBerry devices. Now, if you're the manufacturer of a handset that you want people to be really excited about, what would it tell you if during the demonstration not only was there a multi-second lag that made it so that you were unable to really communicate with one another in real time and really show off, because they have like this weird like camera sharing thing where you can like, you know, use someone else's camera remotely and then like screen share your phone.
But interesting,
as they're like thumbing through the thing, like, it's completely out of step with what the other guy is seeing. So it looked terrible. And then both of these phones on both ends had a bunch of cables hanging out of them. You're selling a wireless phone. Take the USB cables out. Like, they seriously had this massive cables coming out of their hand. I've never
to do screen capture.
I don't know, because I have no idea. One of my colleagues at the office suggested that maybe it was because the battery was only 20 minutes long. So they had to keep charging it the whole time. But yeah, it was a... it was bad. It was a terrible presentation. The CEO, this German guy, could not possibly look more bored with his own product. could not be excited to save his life. It was like he hadn't had coffee ever. They brought out Alicia Keys.
Oh, yeah.
Who kept talking about this people are carrying two devices. They've got a business phone and then the play phone. And I'm like, yeah, no one's doing that now. There's been this whole trend in the marketplace now called bring your own device.
Yes.
And there's... You know, 5 years. See, this is part of the problem, right? Is that the BlackBerry people have not moved past the 5 year ago mark. Like they still think that everyone's walking around with two phones.
Yeah.
So they're trying to make it easier. Now they got like this separation thing where they got personal stuff and business stuff and you know whatever. And then they have Alicia Keys comes out and the CEO of because they also renamed the company. They changed it from RIM to BlackBerry because that's. No one knows Research in Motion anyways, and people are tired of making jokes about rim jobs.
Yeah, sure.
So there's this whole thing, like, because their job site was called Rim Jobs, which...
Was it really?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then, like, there's newspaper articles written, like, you know, thousands of rim jobs on the line. So there's this...
oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and the other great thing is that, you know, for months, there were, like, rim executives being thrown off planes. For being like drunk and starting fights. And so there's always like, you know, all these stories about rim executives and, you know, the rim jobs in jeopardy. So anyways, so now it's BlackBerry. Alicia Keys has this thing called the Keep Moving Project. And I made a joke that maybe they should have done is have Chris Brown come out and punch anybody in the face holding an iPhone. Because it probably would have been more effective. The whole, like, the presentation was bad. Everyone that they had come on stage to talk about their product was like, stammering their way over it. Here's what it is. Everyone wants to be like Steve Jobs.
Yep.
Everybody's terrible at it.
Yep.
Except for people at Apple. Like, yeah. You know, Tim Cook pulls it off.
Yeah, yeah.
And then even Roz Ho, or I can't remember what her name is. I think her name is Roz. I hate her from the Macintosh business unit at Microsoft. I can't stand her.
I think...
She's better than these...
Steve Sinofsky was all right. When he was doing like you know Windows press events and stuff, I thought he was okay.
Oh, I don't remember any of his. Okay. Well, Ballmer's
Ballmer's not trying to be Steve Jobs.
No. But that's just it, right? Like he has a good stage presence, and he actually like you feel. No matter how ridiculous the product is, when Steve Ballmer is talking about it, you really believe that Steve Ballmer is excited about it.
Of course. And I mean, I have no doubt that he's actually excited. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. He's too sweaty not to be excited. And then the people from BlackBerry, they just look bored. And, like, they look uncomfortable. And, like, they don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just something about it where they do not. They don't have the confidence in their own product, mm-hmm. is really what it is. They're mm-hmm. not willing to put themselves out there enough to really take it on the chin. And that's the other thing, too, is that they're going like, you know, we have thousands of apps. There's going to be thousands and thousands. Basically, it's all these promises of things that are going to come to BlackBerry 10, and they mm-hmm. have two phones. So they've had 2 years of nothing. Mm-hmm. And then they come out, and they release two phones, running an operating system... Same hardware, by the way. Like, I think it's the same Snapdragon processor that they've had in previous devices. But the OS is completely different, and it's based on QNX now. Which, for some of the neckbeards in the crowd, they're all like facepalming right now. But the big thing that was like, you know, really pushing this. So, by the way, they also spent a lot of time telling everybody that like the BlackBerry is like the serious business phone, right? They're like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, enterprise users. They want all of our management. They want blah, 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 blah. And this is a very critical and very important business device. And then they're talking about Angry Birds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about media players. And they're mm-hmm. talking about BlackBerry Messenger. Mm-hmm. And all these, like, little chat and messaging and games and Skype. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've got Skype. Look, check it out. We got Skype. And then they do, like, a BlackBerry Messenger video call. And it's like... They're all over the place. It was like watching a ship sink at sea.
Hold on, hold the phones. I'm in this article about BlackBerry 10.
Okay.
And what I've just seen is two things. One, you can change the text color in email messages. Which can only... Have you... So, let me ask you this. Have you ever appreciated the fact that someone used a color other than black in an email message?
No. Never. That is like... You know what? You know what would be more exciting than having a color change in your email would be that if you could do all of your email in Comic Sans.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to love this next one then.
Comic Sans.
No, no. You can change the importance flag of an email message.
Oh, thank goodness.
Which have you ever appreciated someone marking their email as high importance?
Only once in my entire life, and it was because they were making fun of the fact that they had set it to be important.
Yep, yep. I feel like every one of us knows that one guy that marks all of their emails as urgent or high importance or whatever it is.
This is crucial. Yeah, yep. Because that's going to make it stand out.
Clearly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I got to tell you, it was a swing and a miss, and I'm going to feel like a real jackass if this product does well, because I don't see how it could possibly work for them.
Mhm.
I mean, they I have a lot of thoughts on this, and we've kind of blown through a bunch of time. But there are so many things that RIM and BlackBerry do really well. This is not it.
Mhm.
You know, their enterprise connectivity, that's the one differentiating thing. Okay, they have two things they do. One is that they make the best mobile keyboards in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Their devices, if you want a QWERTY keyboard on a mobile phone, they are the only game in town.
Mm.
Every other attempt to do this has sucked. And I don't care who it is. Sony Ericsson's have always sucked. Nokia's have always sucked. If Apple did it, it would probably suck. The Motorola's that I've seen are like the Droid and the Droid. They suck. The BlackBerry keyboards are good. Mm-hmm. They're not just good. They're great. There are people that can like touch type on those without looking at the keyboard.
Sure.
I had a CEO that she could type on a BlackBerry faster than I could on a regular keyboard. And I can do over 100 words a minute. Like she just flew. But yeah, the keyboard and their BlackBerry Enterprise server, the Bez product that let people hook their mobile devices into Exchange, that and the keyboard are the two things that they do well. And Microsoft supporting mobile devices with ActiveSync is dramatically cutting into the latter. So you're stuck with a keyboard and a company that used to be really amazing at mobile enterprise integration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now what I think they should have done is focused on policy and device management, which they did well. And other than that, you know, if they want to focus on the hardware stuff, like I personally think they should have stopped with the hardware and just started licensing server technology.
Hmm.
I think they're going to be a software shop in less than 3 years.
I thought it'd be the opposite direction, that, you know, they'd be making the, like, these are the Android phones or whatever that have the really great keyboards.
Well, that's entirely possible. And I think that if they were smart, they would have dropped this QNX OS nonsense and moved to Android or even Windows Mobile at this point. They could have partnered with Microsoft and you know, done something amazing with their sync service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they really know that market, and they know that side of the technology. What they don't get is consumer devices.
Right, yeah, which is exactly where they seem to be trying to pivot. And
yes, just... and the reason that enterprises have been adopting bring-your-own-device models and switching to consumer devices is because they don't want to have to deal with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so making a phone with a better OS that does this better is not going to help them sell in a business that's already made up their mind that they don't want to be in charge of that.
Yeah, yep.
So I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I don't know.
Yep.
We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, it, you know, BlackBerry 10. They've reached 10 at least.
Okay. Bravo.
Was there ever a BlackBerry 9? I mean, is this actually sequential?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, Apple, they had to hit OS 10 before they started making lots of money.
That's, you know, that is true.
So who knows? Anything's possible.
Yeah. All right.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't have to reboot the BlackBerry anymore when you install software.
You used to have to do that?
I don't remember, but I remember them pointing it out in the stage show that you don't have to reboot.
Wow.
So you can install Angry Birds on your BlackBerry and you don't have to reboot. Yeah.
That's great. That should have been the headline for this episode.
You don't have to reboot it. There's a show. That's a show.
Yeah, that's a show. All right, cool. That is this week's show. If you want to contact us, the email address is show@hellyeah.com. If you want to visit us on the web, the web address is show.hellyeah.com. And
find us on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet @hellyeahshow or our Google Plus page.
All right, that'll do it for this week. We will see you again in about 2 weeks.
Uninstall Java.